John Parr.
I'm here, mate. Yeah.
Good for you. You're fantastic.
Now, I've got to ask you, I've read somewhere, and tell me if I'm wrong, because sometimes the internet lies. Are you originally from Worksop?
I am. I escaped, though. I did escape.
I am from Mansfield.
No.
10 minutes. I've literally read
it. So we're Nottinghamshire boys.
We're Notts boys.
Bloody hell, hey.
What a way to start a Sunday.
Hey,
two Notts boys.
Robin Hood.
Bit of Robin Hood.
Yeah, man.
So how long were you in Worksop for then? Because obviously your career's taken you all
I think until 1980.
Right.
I lived in Worksop, played the clubs in Worksop, you know, as well, the British Legion there and the Miners' Welfare. Started when I was 12 with the Miners' Welfare at Worksop. And then, of course, clubland in those days, in the kind of 70s, was big time in South Yorkshire and everything. So play all that area for maybe 20 years.
It's amazing because, you know, when I'm talking to a celebrity, a pop icon, that I play your music, I've listened to your music, and then you live around the corner.
Yeah.
It's like, this is just weird.
Yeah,
this is bonkers.
I mean, yeah, like you say, from that area, there's not many of us that kind of, you know, I mean, I had a lovely time there. It's a great town. I mean, there used to be 3 cinemas in that town when I was a little boy, you know. It was wonderful, you know, it was great. And But there's a big world out there, isn't there? And trying to get into it, and trying to get into it from that, you know, in those days, you know, I was born in the 50s, so geographically you were pretty glued down, you know.
Yeah,
it was a difficult breakout.
And you know, with regards to, as you say, there's a massive world out there, and the pop industry's huge. You know, when you look at today, I believe from the position that I'm in, that it's a lot easier to get your music around the world now compared to when you would have started. What was it like when you got into the industry to grow?
I mean, it was a closed shop. I mean, I was, you know, 32 before I broke through, and I'd been doing it for money since I was 12. And I was used to no.
Yeah.
I'd catch that train to London with my tapes, and it was no. And within a year, I couldn't get through the, you know, past the reception in a record company. And within a year, Meatloaf had heard my stuff, and suddenly I'm in the executive suite with the managing director of Phonogram or whatever, or Atlantic Records. Life changed that fast for me. But I think I was ready, because you know what it's like. I think if you can entertain people in those northern clubs, the standard was very high.
Yeah.
So I think that I was well ready, but I just wanted a chance. So I think there's lots of people like that. It's how many no's are you prepared to take before you?
Yeah.
And it is, I think, like you said, getting through now. It's more accessible to people to get their music and their art out there.
Do you think it's the internet?
I think the internet, you know, it's been a double-edged sword for me. I mean, obviously financially for artists with all the streaming and everything, cut the income side of it.
Yeah.
But the other side, for an artist like me that's not very well known other than in America, Japan or whatever with my material, it's like today, I'll go on here today, I'll play 3 songs, the audience will really know one. They may know the Running Man from the Schwarzenegger movie, but it's a tough one for me. But the internet suddenly allows people to check me out really quickly, and it's amazing. I mean, this next week, I mean, St. Elmo's goes 100 million streams next week.
Wow.
You can't believe that, you know. So in its day, it probably did a few million record sales, but now we're talking exponential audience. And I find that I've got a really young, you know,
young following
that have gone, and they found it through movies like Spider-Man or Deadpool, where they featured my music, and these kids that wouldn't listen to those radio stations, you know, those kind of retro stations, are suddenly going, who's this guy, we like it.
Yeah. And that's the that's the crazy thing, because not only have you produced and written songs and performed in front of audiences like we've got today, you've actually done a hell of a lot of your stuff in some major motion pictures.
Yeah.
3 Men and a Baby.
Yeah.
Is one of them.
Yeah.
Do you mean, what is it different? You know, if you're going to write a song to perform at a concert, and then you get asked, oh, John, would you do, we're doing a bit of a film, might be called 3 Men and a Baby, or a bit of Spider-Man, or maybe Deadpool,
you're
going to use your music. Is it a different way to produce and put
very
it together?
Very much. Yeah, it's very different. But I think the great thing is, if it's good, if it's a good script, if it's, you know, something smart, I want to be one of those in one of the team of horses pulling the wagon. And so if it's good, I remember when we did the Schwarzenegger movie, I went in the preview theatre, just me and the producer of the film, and I heard the song in my head straight. It was such a great movie and a hotbed to create from, you know. So generally, I don't have to reach too deep. St. Elmo's, I did have to reach deep. Obviously, it's not written about the film, although
it
appears to be.
It's not done bad.
But I mean, by searching for the subject matter, it opened a completely different avenue of my life. And, you know, kind of, I don't know if you know it, but the song is about disablement. I mean, the man in motion is a man in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
You know, and we've now raised $280 million for spinal research with that song as the figurehead of the campaign.
Wow.
And everything. It's just guys, isn't it, with a dream. You know, you're in Mansfield, I'm a workshop. You think, you know, I dream of it, I'm going to get there. And if you get the opportunity and you are ready and lucky, anything can happen.
And obviously you're a Notts lad that gets spotted by Meatloaf. It's kind of crazy. Because you sit there sometimes, you sit back at home and relax and think, what's happened?
Yeah, my life's funny because it's, as I say, in England, people know one song. And my life has been so rich with the people I've been involved with, I've made friends with and everything. So it's been, I don't mean bigger than music, but certainly some of the situations I've found myself in have been really a mind twist, you know, a real mind twist. Yeah.
And obviously today we're here to celebrate the 80s.
Absolutely.
The best, I mean, I'm 38 in a couple of weeks, but for me, I was brought up on the Pet Shop Boys, Erasure, Go West, that type of, so for me, this is like, in my development as a human.
Oh yeah.
Why is it that such a phenomenal era is still big in 2021?
My theory is, I think it's the 60s. I think the 80s is our 60s.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm lucky, I was, you know, formative in the 60s and playing, but I can remember both. I think my thing in the 80s was mainly America, and it was so larger than life. Everything was boom, New York, LA, all the bit. And then in England, it was all that kind of fashion boom, wasn't it, with the new romantic thing and all the, and they kind of led the world with that kind of, you know, that thing, cutting a furrow.
Yeah.
And I don't think, the 70s had some great music and the 90s had great music and on, but the 80s just seemed to be condensed. It was like the 60s, everything was like big melting pot, and it was a great time to be involved in it.
So what do you think, obviously music today is very, very different.
Yeah.
What do you think of the music today? And if you were to listen to current chart music, who do you listen to?
I think, I've forgotten his name. I mean, you caught me on the thing. But I think the man who outsold everybody, 200-1. Ginger guitar, I've forgotten.
Ed Sheeran. Yeah.
So I think Ed led the way of making people realise that music is very, very accessible, and he did it by just playing it in a room and it exploded, didn't it? And then he was doing the same gig that he'd do in an open mic night, he would do at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
And
it's no different, is it?
It's no different.
Into a club that you will have started at in Worksop.
Yes, exactly.
He's taken that to the biggest arenas in the world.
And there's no hiding place, there's just him and his guitar, and he does it. And I think there's quite a few young boys and girls out there that are kind of cutting that way, that aren't being manipulated too much by fashion or, you know, corporate pressure. So I'm sorry if I got your name, Ed. How could I forget? I think, you know, that, and I mean, like you say, it's funny, isn't it? Even some of the acts like Foo Fighters that really are kind of a decade earlier are still kind of pushing into it and setting a standard, and that's why they get so much cross-pollination with young acts, haven't they? They've done some great things where...
Because you get a lot of them that are in the 90s that are collaborating and coming back with your Ed Sheeran,
your
Miley Cyrus. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, if you could collaborate with anybody now, would Ed be the one?
I'd be very interested.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, me, it's like all my heroes are either gone or nearly gone, you know, and so, it, you know, the dream... It'd be somebody like Stevie Wonder even now, you know, or somebody like that, you know. You know, when I was a little kid, you know, the ones that gave you goosebumps, the James Browns, you know, the Little Richards, and all the, you know, those kind of electrical performers that just blew you away. Prince was the one that probably the greatest show I ever saw. I remember seeing the Purple Rain tour, and that was like that. I think it's different now. I think music is a little bit more generally. People listen to it a lot on the headphones, don't they, now? A lot. And it's like, he's singing to me, she's singing to me. And
it's like personal.
Very, very personal, and they're all singing the lyrics. They know them backwards, you know. And, you know, I mean, Coldplay kind of, you know, again, a band that's not really of this decade, but they touched that button that they could bring on here, and they'd have that 80s reaction. If the Coldplay came
Absolutely.
On, they would wow the crowd with all that anthemic thing. And I think that's it, and I think that's what people are going to get today. They're not just reliving their memories, are they? I mean it really is like a firework box we're going to drop a match in, isn't it, today? Because everybody's raring to
go. Exactly. We saw it yesterday. We saw Billy Ocean come out onto stage, and the heavens had opened. Everyone was soaked. It was halfway through the day. He walked on stage, and a bomb went off.
Yeah.
It was just absolutely out of this world. And with that in mind, you're here very early. You're
I'm always early.
Early evening.
Yeah.
What are you up to before you go on stage, and how excited are you to get in front of a live crowd? Because we've been stuck indoors for 18 months.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gigged. This was my first gig for 4 years. So I don't gig so much. So I think my last gig was 2017. And then we were going to go on a world tour, and was cancelled literally like everybody else was. But that was my big one. So we were rehearsed. But I've had to kind of go in the gym and you know, physically with my guitar and vocally, and be match ready for this. It's very, very important for me today. As an artist, it's very important to me. As a man of certain age, it's very important to me to prove I can still cut the mustard.
Because just vocally, you know, obviously as you get older, do your vocals become, like, I go to the gym 5 days a week because I want to physically keep myself in good health. Do you have to do a lot of vocal training and stuff still now, even though you've smashed it?
You do, but the difference is, I would describe it like a boxer. You can do all the rings, the sparring and everything. It's very different when you're in the ring and the bell goes. So this is my bell going, you know, on here. It's my measure too.
You're ready for it as
well, I'm totally ready for it, but I really, really want to, you know, I mean, look at these people out here. They're ready for it. But I mean, you couldn't have given them a harder task. They're all wet, aren't they? You know, the grounds. It's the second day, and you can still feel the vibe. It feels like the sun's blaring out there, and everybody's great, and everybody's got a great look in their eye. Backstage, it's just like me stepping back 4 years. This is it. We're ready. We're rocking, and it's not corny. It's for real. And you can tell.
The thing is, I can feel it.
You can feel it.
I can feel you're excited. You want
very
6:15 to
very much,
hurry up.
Very much, you know. And I'm measuring. You know, it has to be every. Whether I was doing 15 or an hour 50, everything will be in that 15.
Yeah. I can't wait to see you on stage. And before I let you go, John, I've got to ask you, what have you got planned next? What is next for you?
It's a new album that's very nearly finished. We just made a film of the making of. There's a lot of love in it. We got a few legendary people that came in, but we captured it all. So that's my little surprise for next year, you know, that we've got, I think, a bit of magic.
Fantastic. John Parr, thanks ever so much.